Y vamos a ampliar en este tema en directo con el ex militar José Antonio Alcaide. José, gracias por atendernos. Bueno, en principio quiero preguntarle por qué hay tanta preocupación por este nuevo modelo de ojiva de bajo rendimiento. En concreto, ¿cómo va a aumentar el riesgo de un conflicto nuclear?
Bueno, lo primero, buenos días Victoria, buenos días a los televidentes. Como usted bien ha dicho, el grave riesgo con el que nos encontramos a la utilización de este tipo de armas es que inoportunamente se empleen en pequeña cantidad o únicamente una sola ojiva se puede utilizar en un momento dado en un empleo táctico, es decir, en simplemente en una guerra convencional, y las guerras se sabe cómo empiezan, pero no cómo terminan. Ese es el gran problema, de que un simple disparo puede ocasionar toda acción viene una reacción, y eso puede ir en crescendo y llevarnos a una guerra estratégica que sería la destrucción del mundo conocido. Lo cierto es que estas ojivas no son nuevas, es algo que ha retomado la administración Trump, pero que ya en los años 50 del siglo XX se preveía la construcción de este tipo.
Ahora, José, quiero preguntarle por la reacción, o la no reacción, mejor dicho, de la Unión Europea. ¿No debería preocuparle esta noticia al bloque teniendo en cuenta las tensiones entre Rusia y la OTAN?
Bueno, aquí hay un grave problema. Europa está cada vez más desunida. Europa realmente no tiene ningún peso, absolutamente nada de peso dentro de la OTAN. La OTAN es Estados Unidos, es en segundo lugar Gran Bretaña, y el resto hacen exclusivamente lo que les dicen. Bueno, tampoco hacen eso, porque, por ejemplo, el gran enfrentamiento en la OTAN está en que las contribuciones económicas de los países de Europa no se están reflejando, no se están haciendo. Y lo cierto es que, aunque todos los líderes, por llamarles de alguna manera, de Europa, le dicen sí a Trump, lo cierto es que no hacen absolutamente nada. Y esa es quizá también una de las causas de este problema. El señor Trump, en este momento, no se fía de sus aliados europeos por su inactividad y su falta de compromiso en todos los temas referentes a la OTAN. Únicamente Gran Bretaña está siempre al lado de Estados Unidos, y bueno, lógicamente yo creo que Trump ha cogido su propio camino en este sentido y se ha olvidado de Europa, porque Europa está totalmente desunida. O sea, el grado de desunión a nivel militar de Europa es incomparable a lo que podríamos pensar.
Estos son temas que en general al ciudadano promedio le pasan muy de lejos. Sin embargo, hay advertencias respecto de una eventual catástrofe. ¿Cuál es su mirada respecto de lo que puede ocurrir, de este riesgo latente? ¿Cuán lejos o cuán cerca estamos de que pueda pasar?
Bueno, el problema es que siempre estamos en riesgo. Digamos que estamos, como una frase muy española, en el filo de la navaja constantemente. Tengamos en cuenta que el arsenal estratégico nuclear, en teoría, solo lo pueden usar, digámoslo así, la llave, el botón que hace que funcione, lo tienen los presidentes o el Estado Mayor de los diferentes países que tienen esa capacidad, pero por una orden directa del presidente. El problema de la utilización de estas armas de tipo táctico, es decir, la ojiva es muy pequeña, se puede disparar simplemente desde un cañón o la puede transportar un avión y lanzarla en cualquier sitio, puede hacer que en un momento haya un descontrol. Es decir, la cadena de mando no sea capaz de controlar la acción de quien tiene en ese momento ese arma. No es un arma excesivamente potente, una ojiva de estas puede tener un tercio de la potencia de la bomba de Hiroshima, de Nagasaki, pero puede suceder que cualquier mando intermedio, cualquier persona en un momento dado, no sea capaz de saber lo que tiene entre manos, utilizarla en una acción táctica normal, en una guerra normal y corriente, pero que sí tengan esa capacidad. Y el problema es ese, que una vez que se lanza la primera bomba, puede pasar cualquier cosa. Todas las grandes guerras han empezado porque el tipo que estaba en una garita ha disparado sobre alguien, y alguien ha respondido y ya tenemos una guerra. Y una guerra nuclear significaría seguramente el fin de la civilización.
Y aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Norma Martínez se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos. Thank you.
And coming up next on the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org or on your friendly Huff website where we're archiving these shows, it's the January 31st edition of Bathrobes Piers Broadsides 2019. We're going to be looking at a number of things as rainy weather and the poverty pimpsters are competing to divide up the upcoming loot in the next few months, but not really provide much in the way of services as of yet. It's been a cooled, wet winter for a lot of folks. The Ross Camp is bulging, and some city council members are huddling, what with rent control postponed, if not abandoned, and a proposed homelessness report action session supposed to be on the last city council agenda just magically disappeared unaccountably, apparently reportedly by the mayor and the city manager. The focus is now, for some of the city council members, on the February 12th meeting, which is coming up if there isn't an emergency or a special session before then, which, of course, there should be. But no, you see, the council is going on a retreat. Or maybe it's the staff that's preparing for a retreat. I'm not quite sure what the answer is. But in any case, there are many important things to be done rather than deal with the survival needs of folks outside, as usual. Anyway, you'll be listening in on this broadcast to Huff Humrumphing. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Huff, you may remember us. Little pipsqueak voice in the back. Red Church Rumblings, Red Church where folks who are hungry and cold get out cold and have a meal once a week at the Calvary Episcopal Church, compliments of the Calvary Episcopal Church. And also you can hear a bit of babble from the Poor People's Campaign visiting Felton, sort of a local production of Drew Glover, now a councilman, and got to say, I'm more optimistic about him based on the special meeting we had on Monday to look into, we being a group of people, to prepare for the February 12th agenda. I am not going to give you any sunny predictions, but you'll hear a bit about that in this broadcast, so stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And hello again, and welcome to another edition of Bathrobes Piers Broadsides here. Kind of to begin with, I'll kick things off with a kind of a brief report on the Monday sit down with a couple council members, a gaggle of interns, and a bunch of activists concerned with a variety of topics ranging from supplies for an expansion of and humanization of the Ross Camp, opening up the city's bathrooms, ending laws that criminalize homeless generally and have served no useful purpose other than to pander to the paranoia of some merchants and some residents on the west side. At least that's how I see them. A declaration of a homeless emergency is also being discussed. And RVs and the situation for people who are trying to live in their homes, where their homes in this case are their vehicles, and their vehicles are being under attack, surveillance, and pressure from police and hostile neighbors who really intend to gentrify the area come hell or high water. So though we haven't heard a lot about it from some of the public figures who have been in the political arena before, there is some concern about the sleeping ban, the camping ordinance, the sort of the doubles that are being used, doppelgangers, I should say, rather than doubles, that are substitutions, that laws that are being used to go after people who are outside, because the sleeping ban itself has been arguably ruled unconstitutional throughout the 9 western states, or at least the 9th Circuit District, whatever it covers. Chief Mills, as I've mentioned numerous times on this show, and his counterparts in other agencies, specifically Tony Elliott in Parks and Rec, have apparently not decided to rein in their armed troopers to stop them from harassing homeless people, trying to rest and sleep in areas like the parks or on the sidewalks or in other parts of town. In other words, while they can't go after people for sleeping per se, although that's the actual law and is still the law in Santa Cruz, Municipal Code 6.36010A is that makes that quite clear. It hasn't been repealed. There's been no strong, clear statement from the council that that's under consideration, although with 4 progressive, quote-unquote, members, there may be some indication that that is going to be at least discussed, if not some gestures made in that direction. But even with this law set aside, the police are intensively using things like being in a closed area after dark, where the Parks and Rec can close any area it wants to without any kind of public hearing or public notice or public discussion or vote, even by a representative body or consultation with the Parks and Rec Commission. None of these things are required as of now. And presumably this could change if there's a change in the law. And there are 4 council members who have a majority on the 7-member council who could do this. Will they do that? Well, we had hoped that that would happen with rent control, but you saw how Justin Cummins turned the other way on this issue. Now, it's been discussed as to why that happened. We got a lengthy explanation, some of us who were at the Huff meeting, and I guess also you listeners. I think she put this out on the air, too. Cynthia Berger, who's no slouch at trying to get landlords held accountable and renters protected, is concerned that the Movement for Housing Justice, I hope I have their name right, but the issue has been that the landlords and their out-of-town financial backers, the big financial guns from Sacramento and elsewhere, are threatening to use a referendum and then possibly a recall, referendum against any measure that the council passes, reinstituting a rent freeze, you know, with the claim, oh, we voted down rent control. Measure M got voted down at the last election, even though we voted in 2 pro-rent control people and gave rent control a majority on the city council, and even though tenants are a majority of the people who are residents of Santa Cruz, in spite of that, nonetheless, that evil city council is a bunch of bad boys and girl for even considering a rent control because, you know, the landlords spent a million or hundreds of thousands to defeat it. And so what are they doing? You know, they've got to respect the will of the dollars, I mean of the voters. It's really quite simple. Anyway, some of us didn't agree with that approach. I feel a little skeptical about it myself. But that was apparently the excuse that Justin Cummins had for voting against, or at least to postpone, the rent control debate until February 12th, when it's coming back again. It should be quite a rousing February 12th session. We'll see what comes up with that. Anyway, this meeting was proposing a lot of concerns, and went on for a while. It went on for a couple of hours, and there was a lot of discussion about harm reduction, about the situation at the Ross camp, about how to establish an RV safe parking zone, about possibly finding ways to eliminate the really abusive permit parking restrictions that at night that have nothing to do with anything regarding real neighborhood parking spaces for people who live there in their houses, but have to do with making sure that homeless people in their vans don't park their cars late at night in areas where no one's parking anyway, So why not give them an opportunity to park there? And also the misuse of the 72-hour law, which Huff and other organizations like Conscience in Action has pointed out through Alicia Cole's strong press conference with Chief Mills, where she asked him to respect the 72-hour law, and I asked him to advise his officers. Will he change his policies and make sure that his officers are advising people that false complaints against the 72 hours that a vehicle has been there for 72 hours are a misdemeanor or a crime? Don't do it, or we'll charge you for it. At least we'll recommend to the DA that you be charged. Nope, didn't want to do that, or at least certainly wouldn't come out in favor of that. He also claimed to have a secret method for telling whether a vehicle was there for 72 hours. So if he said the same thing to a caller who is calling in for the nth time complaining about some family parked in a vehicle, even though they haven't been there for 72 hours, but he would like the police to move them along anyway just because it blocks the view, makes his wife nervous or his husband nervous, somebody in a vehicle 3 blocks away 2 years before had caused a problem, whatever, you know, I mean, and or if there's a legitimate cause, that's different. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the fact that people who are providing their own housing are doing a service in Santa Cruz, providing a place for folks to live. At least they're providing a place for themselves to live. And as long as they are not violating any laws, the notion that the gentry have the right to exclude them from town, which is really what happens, and which is the reason the rents are rising, is because the gentry are bidding up the housing so that people who are poor are being forced out of the housing. It is an insidious and vicious cycle that has to be stopped, either through the genteel practices of the city council or through direct action by the community. I leave it to you to decide what needs to be done there. There was discussion of what should be done about a more humane camping situation. The Ross Camp, 198 tents were counted by Alicia Cole the other day. Steve Plaich disputed that, but I went out there. There certainly are a lot of them. I don't know if they're 198, but the place is packed with tents, and more tents were coming when I checked there on, I think it was Monday afternoon. So there's a whole bunch of ordinances, which I've talked about endlessly over the last 25 years on this show, which essentially give police power to target and drive away or discourage the presence of young people, homeless people, African-American folks, Hispanics, raggedy-looking people, you know, people who want to linger in the public spaces that aren't shoppers or aren't particularly well-dressed, commercially attractive folks. And also it even impacts tourists. But there's a whole kind of network of laws in the downtown area that makes essentially removes its prospects as a really usable public space by a whole variety of people that changes the color and quality of Santa Cruz from a significantly open kind of area where a lot of different things are happening. And in a way, this kind of continues, although only the most persistent and often the most intractable folks remain, having, you know, been warned in essence by the police and the rangers and the ambassadors or the hosts or the first alarm security, whoever are the thugs of the moment walking up and down, you know, giving helpful advice to people to move along. It puts a real damper on the scene. If you can't sit down within 14 feet of a building, 14 feet of a bench, 14 feet of a phone, 14 feet of a sculpture, 14 feet of a corner, 14 feet of a trash disposal unit, 14 feet of a recycling unit, it leaves very, very little of the sidewalk where you actually can relax. I mean, you can, and people do, of course, because police aren't there 24 hours a day all the time. But any time a merchant gets a bee in his bonnet or a bug in his bungees and wants to drive people away, you get often a huge overactive police response. I mean, you heard about that from Nick Whitehead out at the Ross Camp the other day. Police with submachine guns, the tax squad, were patrolling out there. And although we heard from one of our Ross Camp resident folks who came to the Huff meeting yesterday that there was it wasn't a hostile activity by the police. I think it was more like a training exercise for them. But training with submachine guns in the Ross Camp seems to me to be frightening. Not just frightening to the folks in the Ross Camp, but frightening to all of us. It's like that bear cat that they snuck in under the wire 2 or 3 years ago. It's like the military training, I don't know, what's it called, urban storm, urban schnozzle, I don't know, it's... The militarizing of the police, which sort of, I think it began under Johnson, LBJ, way back when, but intensified under Clinton. And of course, they got to have something to do with all that excess military equipment that they're dumping into the foreign wars and they're coming out of the foreign wars. In any case, we don't need it here. We need to start the pushback here. It's long overdue. And that's what I will keep talking about on this program from time to time, as long as I feel like talking, I guess it is. I'm not going to reminisce about that right now or rhapsodize, but it's a little under the weather and a little cranky about the situation, not as motivated as I used to be, but I still get pissed when I think about it, so maybe that's something. On a Sunday, there's going to be an interview, I hope, with activist Peter Maron, who is a poet, a curmudgeon, and a social and legal activist down in Santa Barbara, who has been fighting for the rights of folks in RVs, particularly disabled folks in RVs. There's this same gentrification push all over. The people with money think they own the world. I guess they do, in their own minds. And they do as long as we let them. So that's a common phenomena, and it's happening up in San Francisco. I was reading about it, too, how the areas of town are becoming the reason why Santa Cruz, for several decades, has had the worst rents of any county. I'm thinking of the county rather than the city, I guess, because that's what I was reading, in the nation. I hadn't been aware of that. That's the claim of the story I read. I think it was either Mercury News or possibly the Chronicle. Could have been the Sentinel. Is that folks with money come in, and when they come in, people start raising their prices in order to bid for the rich folks. And the rich folks are fine with that because they've got the money to do it, but everyone else gets driven away. I mentioned this earlier a few minutes ago, but it bears repeating. And the real question is, what strategies are we going to use to fight it? And that's the one thing we did not talk about at this meeting with Drew Glover, Chris Crone, and the interns and the activists. Maybe it's been talked about a lot and people have gotten exhausted and aren't talking about it anymore. They must be, because they're losing their places in town. Tenants are getting driven out. In fact, I may give a call to Cynthia Berger to see if we can get her latest update. She can be a little hard to reach, so we'll see if that happens. But for the moment, let's take a musical break.
All I wanna say.
And that was They Don't Really Care About Us, the Michael Jackson's Brazilian version of that. The video's really colorful, a lot of dancing, a lot of action, a lot of Michael Jackson. Check it out on YouTube. Now, I'm not a wild fan about organizing for the ballot box, although initiatives and referendum and recalls and citizen votes are, in some elections, they're important. But generally speaking, putting a lot of focus on the electoral system, I think, is, well, I got to say it's not my cup of tea, and I don't think it's an effective way of really changing things because you are playing into the pockets and the paws of the large corporate parties who are essentially hands of the same grasping corporations that are running things. So, still, here are some thoughts at the Poor People's Campaigns get-together in Felton. This is organized locally by Drew Glover, I think, in large part, although he probably gets a lot of support, and he's done some, as I said before, been impressed with what he's did last Monday, but he actually did get together, three or four interns and a bunch of activists to actually work on specific issues which might have some particular outcomes. I talked about that a little bit earlier. So here's what happened up in Felton. It was a long session. A lot of it almost put me to sleep, so I didn't stay for all of it, and I didn't. I'm not going to burden you with a recording of it, but some of it I found of interest, and I'm going to play that now.
Hi, my name is Cynthia Berger, and I'm with Santa Cruz Tenants Association and also Power Surge Tenants' Rights. I'm from Santa Cruz, pretty much. I came there as a child, and had a kid. I grew up there. I had a kid. I brought my kid up there. And then the foreclosure crisis hit. I've always been a renter, so I never really made enough money to plan on buying a house. I was a single working parent. But I had a nice rental situation, and I had a housing subsidy so that while I was working, I didn't have to pay all my entire income for my housing. So that was made me have enough to be able to also buy food and maintain my car, but not really to save much money. After my son, you know, grew up and moved out, and the foreclosure crisis hit, and that was in the mid-late 2000s, and I ended up moving to another city because there wasn't any work in Santa Cruz. There was never much work in Santa Cruz, though, so it was really bad then. And I moved there, and in the Bay Area, and then I lost that job, and they sold that house, and while the house is for sale and I was looking for work, I started looking into, I'm going to have to get another place. And I, you know, started seeing the prices and realizing that, you know, I just had a normal job and I really wasn't going to, it was going to be really hard to find a place. So I came back to Santa Cruz and I ended up living in my car. And, you know, I was about 58 at the time. And I was fortunate. I had a decent situation living in my car. But I started to study, and I hadn't really been an activist before that, but I started to study the whole situation, and I decided to, you know, I kind of asked myself, how did I get here? And I decided to work on the issue that I was experiencing by trying to organize tenants. I felt like the issue was that during the foreclosure crisis, you know, the housing got concentrated into the hands of many fewer people. And so it was just like when the stock buybacks, it's a kind of a hoarding, and those with the wealth, you know, are able to control the supply so that it benefits them, and it's very expensive. And so that's what's basically been going on with housing. There may or may not be enough housing. There isn't enough data. Just to say, there's a lot of empty housing, too. But obviously we need more housing, but there's also a lot of empty housing. So anyway, I decided to get involved, and I looked at the situation, and I saw that well, there are all these little tiny tenant unions, and half of them, their websites haven't had anything put on them in years. And I looked for something that had a broader view, and I found Tenants Together in San Francisco. So they were the only group that was trying to do, putting themselves out there as a statewide tenant organizing group. And that made more sense to me as the number of tenants was going up since the foreclosure crisis. Everybody lost their house, and there were more renters and more competition on the rental market and more concentration of housing into fewer landlords. So I worked with Tenants Together as an intern, I had a mentor with their organizer, and I decided that I would try to organize tenants in Santa Cruz, but I also started a hotline. So there's Santa Cruz Tenants Hotline. If anyone has questions about the rental, not anyone, but it's for tenants. I do it for free. And I've done it for about almost 5 years now, and the number is 831-222-0359, 831-222-0359, and I also have an email and a website, so if you just Google Santa Cruz Tenants, you'll come to my website that has my hotline number and my email. I take a lot of phone calls every week. Today I had about 5 phone calls. Sometimes they're about a half an hour each. It's a lot of time. And I'd actually like to get paid for it by a government body, because there isn't really anyone else that people can call in this county. And I also speak Spanish, so I can do that in Spanish for folks. So I've been just working with other people now, including the People's Democratic Club and just a variety of groups. And I have studied rent control, because it passed in 2016 after 30 years. It passed in 2 cities in the Bay Area. So I went and I interviewed all the people involved in those campaigns, and I decided to try to start a rent control study group in Santa Cruz, and that kind of grew into the city's rent control campaign. I now have, I believe there should be a California tenants union, and that there shouldn't be little tenant unions when you're trying to organize tenants in your little area, because long-term tenants are kind of a dinosaur. Mostly people can't stay in their housing for a long term anymore because the prices are so high. So we have to be able to have Alcoholics Anonymous, Renters Anonymous in every little town, and there needs to be this is my latest thing. There needs to be a format for all of these, for the statewide tenants union, and then there need to be regional meetings, because tenants are now half the residents in California, and that's growing. And so there has to be political power and voting power. So that's what I'm currently looking at. And I have a hotline and a website, and yeah, so that's where I am.
I mean, we have one more thing before we transfer into the Q&A, and that is to listen to someone from our local community that is experiencing, or has experienced, or knows what it's like to experience poverty. So, with that, we have someone that was willing to graciously give us their time and energy, Rit, who has joined us right here. So let's welcome Rit up to the stage, front panel, whatever you want to call it. And this is one of the most important parts. And I'm amazed. I was just too amped from the song to jump into the next Q&A, because I really want to hear from all y'all. But this is incredibly important because it provides us context in life. It puts the reality into the mix of what we're discussing. And just really appreciate you willing to come out and share your story with us, Rit. Let me get that for you.
Hi there, I'm Rit, I'm a human being.
Yeah!
Sadly, recovery is good for that, right? Let's see. This isn't exactly how I thought I'd be holding my first mic. I expected it to be a lot more raw, but I'm going to go easy on this tonight. It's hard to discuss poverty. I didn't even realize I was dealing with poverty until I was in my early 40s, to be quite honest. and it's really weird. I had a good friend that, after a while of living with me, she one day snarkily said, you know, poverty is a social disease. And I kind of went, that's funny. I didn't consider myself impoverished. But when I compare and contrast different phases of my life, I find that I have less rights at some points than others. And I've been blessed with I get low, but I get timely support to continue what I'm doing. I have a very fine mentality, but basically I kind of got dragged through a lot of crap, and I was sitting here and I was kind of looking through to try to narrow it down to experiencing poverty in Santa Cruz. But the thing is I'm intergenerationally impoverished on one side of my family. You wouldn't know it, but I'm black. My dad is quite dark, darker than Drew here. And he was a black man born in 34. My mom, right, he wasn't born a human being. It's what got passed on to me by that side of the family, the mentality that I have, I just listen to Cat Williams or Eddie Murphy or Richard Pryor, you know, if you want to hear it in a way that's palatable, people, or you can go listen to like Immortal Technique if you want to hear it a little bit more raw. But poverty isn't fair, and the world's not fair. But when I'm dealing with a system that wears a mask of fairness and equality, but the actions don't match the stated intent, and then I'm gaslit to feel nuts when I protest about it. It erodes at my humanity, and it's sort of using my humanity against me when I won't do what I was raised to do when dealing with this. Now, the other side of my family, my mother is an immigrant from Argentina, and she's Polish, and after World War II, my Polish family, after kicking a lot of Nazi ass, had nothing left in Poland. All of our family holdings were wiped out. So they followed the bastards down to Argentina and continued it. My grandfather was lost, and some of the family had made it over to the States, and they brought my grandmother and her two daughters up. So here comes my mom into the United States. She looks as white as can be, but speaks the Queen's Spanish, is not American, and was raised by a machine gunist that came from a highborn family. It's a weird setup. I'm not surprised, though, that my dad and my mom made me, because they were really tough. But this is all stuff that I didn't realize until I went to examine myself fairly recently, really, because I can't figure out why my responses to things are so different than other people's responses. I don't accept a broken system. If you're getting paid, you better be doing a good job. So when I get screwy judgments from judges, right? And I also want to be a happy worker, which is why I switched up to chocolate. And I'm not... Well, I won't talk about that. But anyway, I could be doing other things. Yeah, it's kind of funny. So one of the funny things that I guess I bring now as far as poverty... I got railroaded in the courts over the past few years, and being too poor to afford a good lawyer, the public defenders didn't, and the police defective unit did, and basically I had my life threatened. I was quick enough to record it, and when I gave that recording to the police, they waited about 6 months, then showed up at my door with half a dozen people with machine guns, proceeded to take all of the electronic hardware out of my house. And then they said that it was illegal for me to have recorded threats against me. That's not the case. If somebody's making a felony threat against you, you have every right to record it. You're actually helping law enforcement. But they took all my belongings. They prosecuted me. I ended up jailed. And now, a few years later, I wanted my belongings back. And I have to appear on Monday to beg for my belongings back. I can't imagine why that is. Any judge in his right mind would have read through the case and thanked God that I didn't have the sense to appeal. But I'm too poor to appeal. I can't afford that. I can't afford the stress, the legal services, etc. So, being poor is a pain in the ass, but it's also quite character building. And I'm resourceful. And I'm happy to say that there are a number of folks in this room that I invited to come along with me tonight, and Ken invited me to show up, because I'm persistent in being resourceful, and because I keep trying to do the right thing rather than conform to a system. I'm not throwing this yet. I don't think I dropped a single curse word. Hooray! So, I've got a case full of chocolate. Please grab some before you go. It's really good, better than anything on the market in the county. Thanks for hearing me out.
What court?
It's Santa Cruz Court, Monday morning, 8:30, Judge Volkman. And I went and sat in on him today. And the DA that's got the raging heart on for me is Pamela Dunlap. And I really don't understand why, when I'm a victim, I brought a packet, a couple packets, that kind of run through the case. And it's got a couple very relevant pages on it that show where it flipped. And I can't think of a logical, reasonable cause for that. And nobody that I've showed it to can either. So, foregoing paranoid theory, I am just going to kind of go into the court and with as many witnesses as I possibly can and ask Judge Volkman, what the hell am I doing here? It's kind of ridiculous. My statutes of limitations on my children's rights don't run out for a very long time. I was illegally imprisoned for 3 years, if you count probation. You can't get a job trying to get anybody to live with you when you can have your home entered without search warrants and stuff. I can't own firearms. I'm a country boy. Guns are awesome. It's like a high-speed rock. It's like fun, like firecrackers. I grew up, I was allowed to carry a rifle by age six. I was hunting. I have a very different, I'm a peacenik, you know? There's some of the rights that I feel that I've earned by maintaining social compacts, such as no spilled blood, be honest, be a good neighbor, et cetera, that I don't see any reason to be collared or restricted in any way, shape, or form. And the fact that that's happened to me with the lineage I come from, I have a faster, harder reaction to manacles or anybody that wants to strip my rights away.
I, for one, will be showing up. I cry easily. He's showing up Monday morning at the court, looking at the establishment as I can, hopefully as well as any, by way of helping the judge not to treat the case lightly and treat Brent as though he's faceless.
Thanks.
Can you spell your last name?
Oh, yeah. U-D-L-E-Y.
Brent.
Yes, sir.
Could you tell us how long you've been stripped from seeing your daughter? When she was a baby, so you have not seen your daughter, correct?
Not since I got thrown in jail. not since I got thrown in jail. PTSD has a I can't keep track of I don't want to keep track of time and events anymore. I delivered this little girl, and I'm a really good dad. And when I reported abuses that her mom was committing, her mom was better funded with the lawyer, and somehow it got turned around. And I was told that I was vilifying my co-parent, and that despite what I handed him was audio and video, and believe me, I wasn't, I thought I would get help. I actually came to Corey Burt right here at MCR. And it's funny, now that time's gone on and I've gotten some certifications myself, it's been over a year since I've seen my little girl. Her mom does not want me in her life at all. And it's funny coming from a feminist background with my mom and all. My mom's an immigrant lesbian. I struggled for gay rights all through the 80s and did all that fun stuff down in LA and Hollywood. To be treated this way, having a very internal view. No, that's not nice, is it? I know too much to be treated this way. Like, I'm too good of an ally. Really, really. And one of the things is when you leave people out, like I go out and, not looking for props, but I go out and get out hot chocolate on the levee. I go to a men's meeting up at the Abbey, and I've noticed I'll be riding along on my Segway. And here I am with a hot cup of coffee, and there's some freezing bastards on the street. And I used to live in Yosemite and go camp for fun. You know, I would go freeze for fun. And I think about the reality of life. Sorry, I'm talking too much, huh?
It's good. So, Rith, thank you for sharing that. And now we can open it up. That was a great question. Thank you for that. And we can open it up for the rest of the group if there's any questions that you have for any of our specific panelists or Rith.
And I tried to get an update on that man's situation. I think he went to court a couple of Mondays ago, but Drew Glover had no further information. If I get more information, I'll pass it on. Now a little musical whoop-de-doo.
Trump. Six. Lip. Cuckoo. Huckabee. Mueller.
And now, low energy Randy Rainbow in his stupid rendition of the Cell Block Tango. No collusion.
Trump. Six. Flip. Cuckoo. Huckabee. Mueller. Trump. Six. Cuckoo. Huckabee. Mueller. Trump. Six.
He's losing his freaking mind.
Trump six. Huckabee Mueller.
The greatest witch hunt in history has dropped houses on six of the president's personal associates
so far,
including Roger Stone, who's been indicted on multiple charges, including lying, obstructing justice, witness tampering, and lacking basic fashion sense.
Six.
Before Roger came Mike Flynn, George Papadopoulos, and Rick Gates. Then on the same day Michael Cohen pleaded guilty, Donald Trump's campaign chairman Paul Manafort was convicted on 8 felony counts, only because on the other 10 counts the jury was hung. And incidentally, the only thing in that sentence that will ever be described as hung.
They had it coming. They had it coming. They got real Machiavellian.
Look it up.
Just wait and see next. Who will it be next?
Oh, God, I'll laugh if it's Kellyanne.
Trump six.
You know how people people have these little habits that get you down, like cracking their knuckles or implicating you in a criminal conspiracy to mislead the American people in order to influence an election. DT hates that. So it's no wonder that he's violated Title 18 United States Code 1512 by intimidating witnesses like his former fixer, who's already cooperating with the feds. And there's no telling who might flip on Donald next. Flip. Thank God he can at least count on the loyalty of his longtime pal Roger Stone, who swears he would never do his boo like that. And I mean, imagine a fine, upstanding, delusional rat bastard con artist and self-described dirty trickster who dresses like a Dick Tracy villain and idolizes Richard Nixon going back on his word in an act of self-interest? I really wouldn't worry about it, Donald.
He has it coming. He has it coming. He better find a hiding place. He's changing color as here comes Mueller.
At least his jumpsuit will match his face. Oh, it's lonely being individual one these days. Even his own wife is starting to turn on him. Luckily, he has the genuine support of true and unbiased sycophantic media whores. Like Giuliani.
Cuckoo.
And press secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Sarah, let's cut the shit.
Huckabee.
This is now the sixth person directly connected to the president in the Mueller investigation. What is your reaction? Are you scared? You look scared.
Real simple. This has nothing to do with the president and certainly nothing to do with the White House.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure you guys are totally fine.
She has it coming. They have it coming. While Giuliani's cracking jokes. As was predicted, they'll be convicted.
Is it collusion or just a hoax?
President Trump is absolutely right. This is a witch hunt.
The dirty bomb. The dirty bomb.
She has it come. She has it come. They have it come. She has it. Wait, just let Melania go free.
Girl's been through enough.
But she's complicit, so she'll just visit. I hope for her sake, not conjugally.
Trump. Six.
Flip. Cuckoo. Huckabee.
Mueller.
No collusion.
I know, baby.
And that was Randy Rainbow's Cell Block Tango Part 1. I don't think Part 2 is out yet, but for all you Randy Rainbow fans, check YouTube.
While we have the next, 15 minutes or so to answer any questions, they can also be about the movement of the campaign itself or anything that you like.
I'm curious.
Yeah,
I've always been here, and I haven't traveled much, and I've been raising some kids for 15 years and haven't done as much reading as I might like. Is Santa Cruz an outlier? Is our experience different than most other places, or is it true that other cities throughout the nation are experiencing the homelessness like this and these high rents? Is this, you know, I've been thinking, there are all these folks coming from afar because there's a bit of a gold rush with the high tech and whatnot, and that's really what's driving my experience, which is, you know, I'm barely hanging on, and maybe I'll have to leave even though I've always been here. Mm-hmm. And I've thought, there's, you know, nothing I can do. It's just market forces, supply and demand, people coming from afar. So my question is, you know, who has experience outside of Santa Cruz, and was it similar?
Yeah, so I'll let Cynthia field this one, but or any on the panel that wants to take it, but I will say that the while in California, we rank the worst in the country, I believe, for the rate of poverty that exists within Santa Cruz County has one of the highest rates of poverty in any county in California. So California is the worst state for poverty, and Santa Cruz County is one of the worst counties with the highest rates of poverty per capita.
I want to share this personal. I can hear my dad telling me, you got to have to fall to work. And I faulted myself. You know, I should have left.
Here?
Someplace better.
Left here?
Yeah, I should have left.
Well, the thing is, so I hear what you're saying, and I respect what your dad may have instilled, but it's a slippery slope.
to say, I need to move to somewhere less expensive so that I can find work that I am able to do, because that's how we end in really segregated areas of the nation, where you have really tight pockets of wealth, and then you have lower income people congregating in the same place. The problem with that is that property values are... cities are funded by property taxes, so the higher the value of the property, the more money is going to go into the city, which means the better schools that are going to exist, the better infrastructure and resources that are going to be available to people. So you would actually be doing yourself and your family a disservice to move into a place that has lower levels of resources, at least is in my opinion. So that's why this campaign exists, is because there should be policies in place, and elected officials should be doing things and structuring our systems so that people like yourself don't have to feel like you need to move or leave in an area to be able to exist and thrive. Because the goal is not just to survive. The goal is for people to be able to thrive. And Dr. King described that as the beloved community. So it's building the beloved community as a society where everyone can reach their maximum potential and all of the obstacles are removed by the systems that are there to support them. So instead of leaving the area to find work somewhere else, we need to hold the people that are running our economy locally in accountable or in check, to let them know that we see what they're doing. And if they're not going to represent us, the people, not the people that are giving them massive amounts of contributions to their campaigns, but people that are the ones keeping the cities going, doing the handiwork, teaching the schools, being the nurses, all these important jobs that are always underpaid, we can either acknowledge that they're going to work for us, or we're going to work against them and get someone else in those positions that will represent and pass policies that will lift people up. So that's
always underpaid for the last 40 or 50 years. Wages have flatlined for 40 years. And so you have a job and a half, and your wife has a job, and your kids suffer to some extent because you aren't able to be there for them like you would be if you had a job that paid well. And minimum wage doesn't cut it. It's not a living wage. And having, there are elected officials at a national level who care about these things. I have only recently been hearing them speaking out,
right,
because it's more or less as though there are people here. Tammy Baldwin has known about the economic issues forever, but it's only recently that this may or may not seem like it's relevant to flatline wages, but she recently had introduced a bill to get workers on corporate boards, which is the standard in Europe, but not in the U.S., and corporations make different decisions when they have workers' representation. Just an example. And I don't see a way of changing our overall economy that doesn't involve maintaining a consistent presence at the voting booths for the next 20 years.
Anyone else? Well, it's fun. There's a microphone too, if you don't mind using it too.
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I like to look at the bigger. I don't think I need a mic. I like to look at that bigger picture because it's really relevant. You know, we're in a little pocket here, but what's happening here has been happening throughout the entire United States, and it's called the hollowing out of the middle class. Mm-hmm. And that's because of what Kenan says is, it's complicated, and I'm not going to do the whole thing, but basically wages have been flat, and they're trying as hard as they can to mechanize everything so that more of the profits go up to the top. After the foreclosure crisis, all the profits went up to the top, like a funnel. And so people who there used to be a middle class, if you had a skill like nursing or teaching, or, you know, which are traditionally female jobs that are paid less, frankly, but at least they were, paid enough so that you could have a house. But now, because of the concentration of the housing in just a few people's hands, they can manipulate the housing market. And they do, and then, of course, in a place like this where the weather's nice, there are more homeless people and more poor people come here because, or you could be in New York City, and, in the cold in the winter. So, you're not going to find good jobs anywhere, but you might find some cheaper housing. I mean, you're not going to find jobs that really have kept up with the pay, they talk about how much your money's worth now because it's always inflating. But like what I was paid in when I had a really nice job at the school district in say 2000, they're making the same wages now that they were making then. That's almost 20 years ago. And so, but how much have the cost of housing gone?
Teachers are underpaid in California.
Yeah, and but how much has housing gone up? So housing is like, you know, there's maybe a lot of nice little landlords in Santa Cruz, but most of the rentals are owned by corporations, the great majority of them. So, yeah, there's a group of mom-and-pop landlords, but they're not providing anywhere near as much housing as the corporate landlords. And so they like to trot out the little mom-and-pop landlords and talk about their personal issues with financing their rentals and their retirements. But the real issue is the house, you know, there's speculation on the part of very rich people, and so that's making the housing the most expensive in the world. Santa Cruz makes 60% lower wages than Santa Clara County. We're the next poorest county next to L.A. We're almost the poorest county in the whole state, which is one of the poorest states in the country, Santa Cruz. So, yeah, you could go somewhere else, but unfortunately, it's not going to look that much better.
Gentlemen, right here.
There is no solution until the U.S. government pulls back its military spending. Without that, we're all fucked, because we don't need to be waging war all over when we can employ our people in the national forests, river projects, plumbing projects, infrastructure. There's so much work here in this nation. Mm-hmm. I say fuck the Army and what they're doing. They're destroying this place, because it takes so much of our resources to fund those fucks that are killing people all over the planet. It's a bad reflection for all of us who want to travel. Mm-hmm. And the only place I'm safe is in Ireland. You know?
Yeah.
Because I'm IRA. So you're talking to a true Confederate here. John Hart signed the Constitution of this nation. I've been here 14 generations, and I'm sick of the nonsense.
Mm. So that's what we were talking about with the importance of voting and getting people engaged.
I can't go any farther west to get away from the chaos.
Right. Low-income people tend to have some of the lowest rates of voting. And there's a lot of reasons around that, but that's one of the main reasons why this campaign exists, is to raise these issues, bring out these perspectives and the points, and then mobilize us all together over the next 2 years, as we approach 2020, to think about the policies that we want to see change in Santa Cruz, think about on the federal level how we can organize so that we get the representation in the state that we want, representation in the city and the county that we want, but then also on the federal level, with presidential elections, which are coming up in 2020, that's going to be a big pivot and what we might be able to do or not be able to do. And then start this cognitive revolution of people waking up and being like, hey, why are we spending 60% of our overall budget on military? It doesn't make any sense. Why are we, while our infrastructure is crumbling? So, right. Why are we pulling oil, all these other kinds of issues and divestments and stuff.
Fortunately, I had to come up. I took an oath of poverty instead of going up. And I had to be a criminal and go to the national forest to grow marijuana to make millions of dollars worth of cash to defraud the government out of the taxes they're going to extort out of all of us.
That's
so I've been to the other side. I've faced the U.S. Army.
Care for All is something, in fact, local DSA here.
It's not hard to at least get something. I don't know what the steps are. How do we get that next thing on the ballot where we stand on the corner of ocean and water with our sign and people honking at us and we get measure P for poor people?
can I say one more thing about that? Yeah. It'll come to me. It's a very important point, so thank you for bringing it up.
For me, it's been kind of new working in a group, but you can't get anything done by yourself, even if you really have a lot of desire and it's exciting to you. So that's the thing that is the challenge, and that is just here's an example. Today, we were talking to the police chief in Santa Cruz about, you know, helping people who are being persecuted in their recreational vehicles, and he kept talking about how, hey, well, I just talked to 100 other people who, you know, and so there's 100 people that are organized and writing letters as a group. That's what you have to do if you want people to listen to you, you know, or go there, but you have to do it as a group. and then you're much more convincing. And so we can sit and brainstorm, but when it comes down to it, it's that nuts and bolts of, I don't like going door to door, I'm a temper, but it's a, that's what needs to kind of get done. And then just a lot of boring, you know, sometimes just planning out. It's not exciting for everybody, but there's, you know, it's really work, and it's hard if you have to work a lot. And so, like, with the, that's always a challenge in tenant organizing, especially people don't have a natural affinity because someone is their neighbor who rents. But that's what is actually binding you together politically, is facing a landlord and politically. So, you know, that's, it's challenging.
And speaking about that organizing and ground game, with, that's kind of what we're doing with the Poor People's Campaign right now, is that we're engaging with all y'all in this conversation. And if you're interested, when you signed up, you were asked if you want more information about what's going to be happening in the future. Up till right now, we have about 160 names that have signed in and attended our town halls since we started the project. So if you can think about that, that's 160 more people that are aware of the concepts and the issues that are going on around poverty, 160 people that signed up to be engaged and stay aware of what's happening with regards to policy and poverty in the city, and as that continues to grow, 160-plus people that we can call on when it becomes time for us to enact any kind of action, knock on doors, go and talk to things, as long as it has to do with fitting into this moral agenda. And I want to emphasize that while we've been talking a lot about poverty specifically here, there are multiple aspects to the campaign that are being focused on, from systemic racism to militarism in the war economy to poverty, and then also representation in voting and government. Did I say ecological devastation?
No.
Because that's the big one. These pictures keep reminding me of it, because I want us to emphasize that we're not only talking about beautiful people, but we're talking about the Mother Nature and how the destruction of Mother Nature will disproportionately impact poor people across the world.
But how much of it gets beyond talking is the question. And of all these sort of Democratic Party politicians kind of nestling together in the Poor People's Campaign, and locals sort of talking about everything, well, not much about local issues. And then again, to me, one of the overwhelming non-local issues that is ignored almost universally by all the Democratic Party politicians are the foreign wars. I mean, yes, there's a little pushback on Yemen. Yes, there's a little pushback on Saudi Arabia. But the basic war machine, it's everyone's hyped up on Russiagate, who is mainstream or a Democratic Party people, mainstream establishment media. I'm not talking Fox Media, I'm talking MSNBC and CNN. The notion that there is a great Russian conspiracy here that's worth abandoning nuclear weapons treaties for, that there is it's worth abandoning any kind of rapprochement with North Korea, all to get Trump. I mean, it's a pretty sad situation. And the evidence is pretty thin. Lots of evidence of obstruction of justice, lots of evidence of lying to the FBI, perhaps, and of financial finagling. But the attacks on WikiLeaks and the attacks that essentially are in defense of and glamorization or glorification or deification of the FBI really seems strange coming out of the mouths of people who had formerly expressed a lot of skepticism about these agencies and about the military. Now suddenly they're best buddies. Political opportunism at its worst, but it's actually been it's a long-standing feature of U.S. Mainstream politics. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw in that political blast. Here's some Red Church interviews from folks who got their own lives to struggle with. So I'm here at the 28th of January, across from the Red Church, talking with
Patrick. Yo, girl, back to the motel.
Hey. So,
all right. That's just how I start mine off.
Well,
there you are. And Patrick, you have a report of some kind?
These police out here are getting hot and heavy again. They're using the tent city as a basically a focal point to start from every day. And I think that's kind of odd, you know, to corral a bunch of people up and then just start handpicking them for, like, who's going to jail and who's not.
Tell me more about this. Are you living out there yourself?
No, I am not, but I have, walked by there pretty frequently.
When was the last time you observed this kind of police activity?
Actually, it was the day that you were there in the morning, and we had chatted for a quick second.
Okay. I'm trying to remember what day that was. But
that was the day I said it turned into a shooting gallery.
Okay. And we're talking about this week, last week?
About 3 weeks back.
So what did you observe that day after when the police came? What happened?
I just kind of observed them, you know, picking out random dealers that have been known for dealing and basically going in their tents and ransacking the tents.
Probation condition?
I think all of that. I think
because
those things, yeah.
You're supposed to respect the privacy of the tent unless there's some sort of a search clause.
Right. If they didn't have one, they're gonna.
I see.
Because they make you plead to one charge for another. And mainly, you know, you're going to be screwed one way or the other here in this town.
Now, and you have chosen not to use the Ross camp yourself.
I have chose that because I don't like the overpopulation of it. And when people get that close, they tend to
like rats in a cage.
Walk away with other people's things.
That too, I guess.
Yeah. And I'm trying to keep something, anything, just for a little while, not forever.
I see. You're not a hoarder of your possessions, but you want to have a hat to wear.
Yeah, or socks, or, you know, those necessities that people need.
So are you living in a small camp yourself? Or?
Yes, I am, with probably five others.
And how are police treating you?
Actually, we don't deal with the police. We deal with Caltrans and Highway Patrol. So, yeah, okay.
How are they dealing?
They are very nice. And they tell us to basically keep our areas clean, and that's what we do.
How long have you been in the same area?
10 years, 15 years.
Wow. So this is a long time practice.
Oh, yeah. You know, they tell me to get out of here and there and here and there, and they throw my life away about 7-8 times, you know, and then I bounce back, and basically they don't know where the hell I am.
So, in fact, they have, in the course of that last 10 or 15 years, interfered in your life a number of times.
I would say at least 20.
What kind of form did this interference take?
Well, one time it was a bait bike that they just put out there unattended and abandoned. And I walked by it and ground scored it. And they said, oh, that's over $1,000. Gave me 45 days in jail. I thought it was preposterous. I thought it should be 10 days.
And the most recent instance of this kind of interruption in your life has been when?
Oh, when I'm in court and they're telling me, hey, you're fucked whether you like it or not. Because, yeah, it was entrapment and we can do it. Yep.
When did that last happen?
Oh, shit, about 4 or 5 months back. And I would like to sue their asses for that one and get reimbursed for the 45 days and all of that stuff because it should have been no fine and no time until they had a lock that I broke off that bike.
Who were the cops involved? This is Highway Patrol?
They call them the ghosts, the black ghosts.
And are these at Santa Cruz, please?
These are tactical SWATs. They're in black cars and they're in black clothes.
How were you treated physically by these cops?
Very poorly.
Were you, in fact, assaulted?
I was threatened, assaulted, and told that they would put drugs on me to keep me in there if I didn't conform, basically, to what they wanted me to do.
And what did they want you to do?
They wanted me to basically be their little informant.
And did you, or should I even ask you if you...
I'll tell you what I did. I took another one, another bait bike, and I got busted by them again. And the judge said, why'd you do that? And I said, because I wanted to see what you guys were going to do this time. So you were testing me? And I said, no, I wasn't testing you. What I'm doing here is I'm trying to convey to you people that I'm not a bike thief. You didn't hear me last time. I don't think you're going to hear me this time.
And did the judge hear you?
He said, did you do your 45 days? And I said, I'm about to turn myself in today. He goes, today? And I said, yeah. And he reprimanded me on the spot.
You mean he
jailed me the 45 days that day?
I see. And so did you serve for 45
days? Yes, I did.
Any comments about the nature of the jail time?
It's got worse.
How so?
The way that they favor some inmates and just screw the others.
And how does this favor us?
Extra food, extra this, extra phone time, extra things like that. Some people get it, some people don't.
And how do they treat you?
I don't get it.
You're just not one of the favored few.
No, and you know, it was funny. I had told her, you know, hey, there was 42 people, there was three lockdowns, and there was five trays that are inside rooms, right? And she goes, so you had that all calculated? I was like, yeah, well, you know, I'm trying to get paid at least one extra tray for doing all the work and hand-delivering them to the lockdown cells. And so they agree to do that, but sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And it just happened to be that whole 45 days they didn't. So I was literally starving in there.
And you plan to pig out at the Red Church tonight?
Exactly. I'm trying to catch up.
And you want to say who you've been talking to?
Patrick and Robert Norris, Freak Radio.
That's me.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Patrick. Yep. And you've got something you want to say.
Yeah.
What's your name?
My name is Douglas Crowe.
Go ahead.
And I bounce around from this park over here, Harvey West up there, over here, you know, for different parks, whatever. Mm-hmm. And we go there, we eat lunch. Well, we sit down, you remember sandwich, here comes Cobb. Okay. I think I want to sue him with a class action lawsuit because I try to be proven found as a homeless person. And it's our fault, you know. And I think we should have a place to sit there at least 10, 15 minutes and eat our meal, our lunch, whatever, and charge the food for 5 minutes, and the crosswalk come up and they can stop our meal. And the last 5 days, they chased me all over this town.
And when were you most recently contacted by the police?
Today.
And how did that happen?
I got to come out of the library. I got a book, Foot. And I was telling them, they find my way to take me to the hospital, whatever, and they come right over straight to me, and they'll be honest. And then I said, well, I'm leaving because I'm going to eat. I'll be late. And they said, okay, and then they hit Dreamcatcher. And I was over to, Emmeline, you went there, and a cop come up, we live in the street. Well, it's a public street. Don't you think I'm allowed to walk up this public street? I think they ought to leave us alone to eat our lunches wherever we're at, and quit profiling us. If not, give us a place to eat our damn lunch and leave us alone, man, okay? If I'm throwing rocks through the window and breaking it, by all means, put me in jail. Okay?
But eating your lunch is not breaking the law.
No, sir. And I went to jail for eating my damn lunch.
Eating lunch without a permit, eh?
Yeah, I did, but that's a good thing because I got off probation. I'm clean now. And but we'll walk up there and eat our lunch, whatever. Look back by Costco, and here comes the cops on the street, man. You know, and we didn't get the sandwich. You know, it's like, I think we have a place we can go, and they're not going to bother us if we eat our lunch or whatever, or we wash our clothes or whatever. I think we need an hour for ourselves to eat our lunch, whatever.
Yeah. Now, what about sleeping? Have you had any hassles for sleeping in the last couple weeks?
I walk around all night because everywhere I go, they come to put me in jail. Took my covers out. I mean, you know, so it's like, I sit in daytime a couple hours here and there now, and they constantly moving on my feet, and I got a broken foot. So it's like kind of hard on me, you know. Me and my wife had a car one time. She, I'm out of me, it was in her name. Called a stolen car. They can't, they're legally not allowed to do nothing to me because it's car and property. We buy it, pay for it. Well, they put me in jail for my own car, and I had to go to the psych ward and stuff, yeah, whatever. And they put too much power. They shouldn't have that much power, that's all. There should be some kind of discretion where, you know, we're not doing nothing to leave us alone, man.
I hear you. I'm catching some of it, and we've been talking with
Douglas Crowe.
Thanks, Douglas. And for those of you who are really patient and have a very good audio device to listen to, you might want to go through that again several times to decipher Douglas's speech, which is fast and sometimes hard to understand. You're tuned to Free Radio at freakradio.org. We wish we were at 101.3. We hope to get back there, but we need a transmitter site, and we also need a studio space, although we've been doing without a studio space for quite a while now. If you have a suggestion for a 10 by 10 space with electricity or internet and access to a bathroom, we'll rent it, and then you'll give you a bonus as well. For information to pass on to us, the number to call is 423-4833. That's also the number if you want to be on the air to talk about some of the experiences you've had here in Santa Cruz. Maybe you have some comments, criticisms, additions to what you've heard on the air. That, again, can be done through 423-4833. These shows are also archived on the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website. That's at huffsantacruz.org. HuffSantaCruz, one word, all small letters, .org. And you'll find endless number of shows, some of them very interesting, or at least I find them so, from the last 25 or 30 years. The latest shows appear, if you go to the name of our show, which is Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides on the main page, and look under Latest Shows and Last Shows.
Which 24/7 played. He screamed a battle cry to the living dead, who danced while the Muslims prayed. And then the News Clan landed its leading man, and now we're living in the film they made, where Bozo saddles John Wayne's private plane, and into high noon cell hate flow. Stephen King couldn't conceive it, and your buddy can't believe it, that a clown got the nuclear code. Now come check out the scene, every day is Halloween. Dead ideas waltzing from their graves. Swipe right for information, bringing back that old plantation. Only this time we all get to be slaves. Cause it's good old boys on a fear run, led by a monkey on a pearl commode, a toddler with a handgun, a clown with the nuclear code. Trying to heal. Just steady giving you the snub. You should have got together with the folks born in bad weather. Be like, baby, welcome to the club. So feel your resistance and true love's insistence. Bear the borders in your head and do. See, the king's dream is a mixtape which gives love and takes shape, changes colors to stay true. Hey, do you want to hear a story about how hate challenged glory, but lost it at the races, you see? When Brooklyn sings the rhymes, we're world out of time as we wave back to the clown as he
And that's the audio of a video by Spike Lee, Clown with the Nuclear Code. which has got some pretty nice visuals, too. And less of the anti-Russian propaganda than usual, which I like. Back to the Red Church.
This is talking with Travis, by the way. This, we had 144 people at Food Not Bombs on Saturday, and we didn't get to count them on Saturday because the counter was actually broken both days.
Did you break the counter, Travis?
No, the counter
out of frustration and anger.
No, it was flooded with spices. There was some extra cinnamon.
You tried to eat the
counter.
That's what happened.
No. Some reason
there's no accounting for this, Umbre.
Wasn't counting at one person at a time. It was
anything else happened other than the number that you don't even know whether it was?
Well, we have an interesting issue that we that one of me and the volunteers created, that there were 50 sporks per package, and we'd count the people on how many packages of sporks we used.
This is thrilling news, Travis. So, I must say,
this is the only way we were able
to spice it up, or I'm going to move on to a murder rap or something.
The only way we were able to count the people was
by counting the sporks.
By counting the sporks.
Well, spork you, buddy.
And it was 144.
Well, thank you. We've been talking with the
Travis,
cutlery expert.
Yeah.
Travis. Any reports from the street?
I'm actually on the streets.
Don't walk around downtown.
Talking to that old rag picker, actually trash picker upper. What's your name, sir?
Joyful Heart.
Joyful Heart. How joyful are you these days?
I am rather joyful, yes.
And is that just because of your native constitution, or has something happened recently that made you more joyful?
How about D, all of the above?
You would know, I don't.
Well, yeah, it's D, all of the above.
Any been out to the camp recently, the Ross camp?
I avoid that place, yeah.
A lot of people out there, your brothers and sisters.
A lot of people avoid it, too. A lot of the homeless people will not go out there.
Have you been visiting any other camps?
I am not aware of any others.
Because, I mean, most people are not in the Ross camp, and they're outside who are homeless.
Yeah, a lot of people are have little niche camps here and there. Some people move around each night. Some people have vehicles. It's different for each person.
Well, I'll leave you in peace unless there's something you want to add.
No, just God bless everybody.
Okay, we've been listening to the thoughts.
The Joyful Heart.
Thank you, Joyful Heart.
Announcement, sort of an announcement. Nothing terribly exciting to announce tonight except that some people are meeting with an eye to establishing a car park where people can park their vehicles, maybe down the road. If they do, who knows? There's some movement in that direction, but it isn't happening like tomorrow or the next day, so I don't have too much hope to give anybody who's outside. Sir?
If anybody doesn't know, Pacatiempo's shoulder is a resting spot.
So you have no hassles up there?
No hassles there.
Okay. Has anybody gotten a ticket in the last week for sleeping or sitting or walking or otherwise being homeless? Raise your hand if you got a ticket. Thank you. All right. You got one too. Okay, that's four people I saw. Anybody who's seated got a ticket for anything that they want to confess at this time? Okay.
I get lots of tickets.
Well, that's something.
They're all trespassing.
From rangers or from cops you get trespassing tickets?
From cops.
And do they give you a place to go, or do they just give you a ticket?
They point to the tented land.
Oh, the Ross camp.
Right.
And what's your response to that?
Lousy. I don't like it.
You're not interested in going there?
No.
Well, you're not the only one. A lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
How many tickets would you say you've gotten in the last, I don't know, month?
Four.
And you've been sleeping out pretty much every night?
Every night.
You move around so that you
Our moving target?
Always.
And are you a lone sleeper or do you sleep with others?
Or is it mixed? People like to tag around, but I'd rather be alone. Less people to steal from me.
Dig it. Do you use a tent or are you without a tent?
If it's not raining, I'm out in the air.
And ever use, dare I ask it, any of the social services, like the Homeless Lackey Services Center?
No, God, no.
Okay.
They'll rob from you.
You've had that experience or you knew about it secondhand?
They always rob from me. I lost 4 bikes in the last month.
From the Homeless Lackey Services Center?
From
Coral Street?
Everywhere that there is. The people that hang out at the Coral, they're the ones who steal.
Mitch,
to be exact. Mitch, if you're out there, Mitch, you're a lousy scumbag thief.
Is Mitch an employee or an independent operator?
He's an independent operator.
What kind of changes do you want to see in town that would make it a better environment for you and people you care about?
Give somebody a reason and a direction, which means you're going to have to educate them, and to educate them, you're going to have to get them a place to store what few things they have, more than a box that they have currently, and you're going to have to not steal from them, and you're going to have to let them have some degree of normality for 2 or 3 days in a row to a month or two in a row. And they can't do that. They can't put 2 days together. They can't put 2 nickels together because they're lost. If they stop, someone steals from them, or they get arrested, or they get a ticket.
Have you used the day and night storage program at all?
Yes.
How is it?
Excellent.
So that's one thing
big enough.
And so that's one service you have.
It's nice and it's safe. The stuff's still there, and the people are wonderful.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Yeah, works. It's very good. You guys are actually very pro homeless / pro, take care of the person that's needy. Somebody was giving them, that works for him, was even in probably donated time, I don't know, didn't do his job correctly, and he didn't even spare the guy any. He right in front of everybody, he told them exactly what he thought. You take care of them and love them, or you're not going to. We don't have room for you here. Huh? I like it.
Not like the Homeless Lackey Services Center.
No. Not even.
You're talking about Brent Adams' program.
I'm talking about
Day and Night Storage on Felker Street.
That's the one. The one over there by the footbridge. That's the one I'm talking about. That place is great. The Coral Street, other than Paul at HPHP, the rest of it's lousy.
How about San Francisco Soup Kitchen?
That place is good, but that tall guy with the short dark hair is hateful. He works there and lives in that little hut over there, and he's mean to everybody.
What about that? Go ahead.
He's not mean to the right people, and he's mean to the wrong people. Overly.
That Red Church program that it serves every Monday night.
I think they're the best. They treat people nice, and they don't hassle you, and nobody bothers you at all.
You want to say who you are for free radio?
Me? My name is Todd Jones.
Thank you, Todd.
You're welcome.
Oh, I think I'll pass.
Thank you, Nancy. Talking with?
Steve.
Hey, Steve.
A few times, probably right on this, when you're on one of your recordings here, and maybe in the air a couple times in the past, I've told you about how I see what goes on in Santa Cruz is very similar to probably what went on in Nazi Germany prior to the rise of power of the Nazis and all the atrocities they committed. And a lot of people, when I say that around town, this is always a nut. No Nazis around. Or they would think I'm calling them Nazis. Occasionally I would use the word fascism.
What's been happening to you recently?
Well, let me just finish. Yeah. I was very happy to see that Madam Albright is coming to town, wrote a book called Fascism, A Warning. And I'm not happy that she sees a rise in fascism, but that somebody that people might listen to as a warning did publish a book on exactly what I was talking about.
Albright is a fascist, though. She should know, right?
No, I don't think so.
She's the one who said 500,000 children dead in Iraq is a small price to pay. 1995. She was famous under Clinton for that.
Well, I'm glad that somebody published a book, Fascism, A Warning, because I've been trying to warn people about it right here in Santa Cruz, and they just think I'm nuts. So anyway,
no, I hear what you're saying.
Oh, okay. All right. So I am happy about that. At least somebody's going to need.
Here,
at least listen a little more.
I got you.
You know, turning off the water, no public restrooms, all that kind of thing. I'm willing to bet that this same thing occurred prior. You know, the German people just didn't wake up one day and say, oh, I put them in the oven, you know? And it's not a race thing here. I
see cooked them slowly.
The class thing, homeless. You know, carry a backpack, Star of David backpack, Scarlet Letter. To me, I see them all very...
Triangle.
Right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what's up?
Thank you.
Oh, you asked about tickets. I did get one for not having insurance in the car, when I do have insurance, which, again, is an example of what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
We're on the line with Alicia Cool, who is cool-headed and hot-tempered. Actually, I don't know if you're hot-tempered. How you doing, Alicia?
Hot-tempered sometimes, I guess. It depends on how you treat me.
So, you've been out at the Ross camp, hopefully in touch with your friend Desiree, who I still haven't gotten any contact for. Maybe I will at some point. How are things going out there?
They're hanging in there. We brought them about 60 gallons of water, and today was our second time doing that.
Huh. And how, by we, you mean you and your family, or are you and some other folks?
Me and my good friend Sarah, and I also have a GoFundMe on the Santa Cruz community site and stuff like that for water and baby wipes.
And how is that?
They have no access to showers.
How is that going? Are people contributing to that?
Well, so far I got a $25 donation.
Huh. And you and Sarah put out how much money to help the folks?
Well, so far Sarah has put out, gosh, I mean, probably over $100. And we're going out this Saturday, too. I'm not sure what we'll end up spending that time. It just depends each time.
What did you find out there? Because I've just been playing some accounts from the Red Church. Several people have said they stay far away from the Ross camp because it's not really clear what their reasons are. They're sort of vague. Do you have any sense of... Let me sort of jump away from the Ross camp. Have you had many conversations with people away from the Ross camp about it and what their feelings are?
Actually, no. I haven't done that. So I don't know what other homeless people that are outside the Ross camp think of the Ross camp. But I think the Ross camp is going fairly well. People there have a decent sense of communication with each other. It was fairly clean. They could use some more wood chips, but it wasn't super bad.
Mm-hmm. How many folks did you actually contact today and talk to?
Well, a whole bunch, because we were passing out water. I mean, we were passing out individual gallons, and we walked all the way across to make sure that everybody got some. And I talked to a nice lady named Mama Shannon, who said she's preparing some reports and some information for me.
I know Mama Shannon. She's also a poet, if it's the same Mama Shannon.
I think so, probably.
Yeah. I know you counted 198 tents, or kind of a combination of tents and lean-tos and tarped areas about a week ago. Has that changed?
I did not take another count, but it looked to be the same to me. I mean, I was told that the tent count changes daily, but they only have so much space, and it's pretty much still all filled. So I would assume that it's close to that number.
Mm-hmm. Now, on Sunday, actually it was last Saturday, I received a report from Nutcracker Nick Whitehead. You may remember who he is, who was out there at the same time that police showed up with submachine guns, who were not necessarily hostile, but certainly looked kind of fearsome standing about. Any reports on police activity out there?
No, I didn't see any police activity today. The security guard for the Ross complex came up and she was really nice, asked us what we were doing, made sure it was my vehicle, you know, that we were using, I guess. Asked us if the vehicles next to us were ours. I said no. But she was polite, but I didn't see any police activity, although yesterday when I drove by there, I did see a couple cop cars up at the top by the bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what they were there for, and I didn't see any machine guns.
Now, I know that when I was out there, and I'm about to play a little bit of my visit there, which was very brief. I guess it was Monday. There was, of course, the long fence, which fences off Ross from the camp. But there was also a sort of a gate in the fence that one of the Ross campers, I assume he was a Ross camper, was kind of opening up and closing and letting people in and out. Did you have any trouble accessing the camp, and how did you get up there?
Well, I drive right into the driveway, and I go all the way back, and towards the left of Ross, there's this driveway back there, and I just park right there, and there is a hole in the fence that faces kind of like the back area of those buildings. It's on the River Street side, and we just go through a couple holes in the fence right there.
Mm-hmm. And so the security guard knows it's there and didn't try to stop you or anything like that?
No.
Of course, you didn't try to use the Ross bathrooms, I hope.
No, I didn't.
All right, then. All right, that's good for that. What's happening with RVs? You yourself have had a talk with Andy Mills some weeks ago, and you're still in your RV, right? Any changes in that situation in terms of how you're being treated?
Well, I have noticed that Havy still will chalk me. He hasn't given any of the green stickers, so I'm thinking that maybe that's his way of saying, like, I know you're not an abandoned vehicle, but I'm definitely still going to chalk you to make sure you're obeying the 72-hour thing.
This is Lieutenant Havy, he's not really that retired. I see him still on the police roster in this listing I got from the police department. But what's the difference between the green sticker and the chalk?
Well, I think the chalk is to monitor just your time frame there, to make sure that you've driven enough to wear the chalk off, or that, you know, the chalk isn't in the same position 72 hours later. Otherwise, he'll come and tow you away. But the green sticker is a direct, it says something on there, like a direct implication that he's assuming it's a abandoned vehicle.
Now, this...
I wonder if that's his way of saying, like, he knows me now, he knows it's not an abandoned vehicle.
Have you invited him in for tea, perhaps?
No, but I'm just thinking he might be aware of me, that this is my RV now.
I see. What about the neighbors? Have they dropped by and offered, to chat with you, or invited you to leave the neighborhood, or?
No, where I park is actually pretty welcoming so far, and I did get a nice lady who has sent me a couple messages on my messenger asking us to potentially join her neighborhood, like we can park where they live, and her neighbors would be welcoming to that. But I guess we've never met. When she messaged me, I thought we'd met before, but we haven't. So she wants to meet us. I guess her neighbors are requesting that they meet us first before we actually go to the neighborhood, and then maybe we stay for like a week, and if it works out, that we can, like, you know, I guess park longer term in their neighborhood.
I mean, actually, you can park as long as you want in anybody's neighborhood, provided you are not taking one of the fabled permit parking spaces for more than 2 hours, or being there
right
in the wee hours of the night.
Well, I should say we will get a welcome to park in their neighborhood.
I mean, rather than a broken window in the back of your vehicle.
Right.
Which, of course, was the complaint, I believe, of Pat and John Colby in one of their vehicles. So, have you had much success in talking to other RV people? I know one time you were interested in making sure that folks had some sort of connection with each other. Indeed, that was part of the plan in getting together with Chief Andy Mills, was to not just have a few high-profile activists, you know, because of their publicity, which you got, you were, of course, in a story on the front page of the Sentinel that Jessica York wrote a week after your conversation with Mills. But not just, and that may have, you know, discouraged police from undue harassment of you personally, but it wouldn't necessarily cut down on their harassment of other people in RVs or in vehicles. Have you had any sense of what's going on there?
Not particularly. There was like a light mention of perhaps in that meeting that we had, potentially asking the police to, I forget how it was worded, like deprioritize, you know, looking at RVs or ticketing or things like that. But other than that, I'm not sure about like if we're going to get an RV park soon, I do have a hope for that. And as far as reaching out, I mean, I met a lot of people who are in RVs, and I do know a few of them, but we don't talk on a real regular basis.
Mm-hmm. You were at this meeting of the two councilmen, their interns, and a number of activists last Monday. What was your take on all that?
Well, I thought it was a great meeting that we all got to sit around and voice, you know, our opinions on the proposals and make actual proposals. And I just have high hopes that some of those things will happen. I mean, I know that it still has to go through the channels, you know, and then it has to be voted on, I guess, by a majority decision through the city council members. And I'm just hoping that that happens.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any further conversations with folks involved in that process, or alternately, folks who are outside, whose information you want to pass on to people listening to this show?
Well, I just talked with the interns so that we can continue working on the proposals. I don't really want to share their contact information or anything, but other than that, I've been trying to partner with different people on Facebook to try to get basically the needs of the Ross camp met, like, while this is happening. Because while this is all being discussed and proposed, there are still immediate needs that need to be met right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I've been trying to do right now while, you know, those proposals are being worked on.
Any sense of other camps opening up, since the majority of homeless people, as I understand it, are outside the Ross camp?
Actually, I talked to Desiree, well, just today, because I was there passing out water, as you know, with Sarah. But there are a lot of people there that don't really want to be there anymore. It's getting really overcrowded. And so they are potentially trying to think of another place to go, and I'm trying to brainstorm with them. I mean, I know the city is trying to find different options, but they might be finding one on their own before that happens, so.
Well, that was originally how the Ross Camp and the San Lorenzo Campground the year before started, was people went there independently of the grand design or the brainstorm of Andy Mills. They just happened to go there. And then, of course, the police and the Parks and Rec accepted it as a fait accompli, as something that it just happened. That was where it was at. So that could happen again. Any events coming up you want to mention that you want people to know about? Backyard barbecues.
I do believe we have something coming up February 14th, don't we?
Oh, that's true. I'm glad you mentioned it. Indeed, at the Conscience in Action meeting on Wednesday, it was yesterday, at my insistence, because I became cranky with us talking too much about the city council activities, I was reminded everybody that one of the purposes of Conscience in Action was to put conscience in action, so to speak. And so the idea was, we had some success with this Mills confrontation, although I don't know how much his officers are respecting the 72-hour law that was one of the main focuses of this conversation that you had with him. I mean, you know, who knows how Veronica Crowe is doing? She was one of the other people there, or Leland, another guy, was there. But it seemed to have some effect, I think, with respect to you, and it certainly gave some publicity to the issue. So I guess we came to a decision around the issue of what kind of to do a secondary invitation to the police to declare that not only are they not going to enforce the sleeping ban, since that would mean they would be in contravention of the courts, but they will also stop using the alternate laws that are being used to essentially accomplish the same effect: drive people away, waken them in the middle of the night from where they're sleeping, and even in a sense, in a worse kind of consequence, driving them to the Ross camp when the Ross camp is overcrowded. Does that pretty much sum up what you took from that particular planned February 14th? Is it the 14th? I guess it's the 14th we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a Valentine's Day.
February 14th at 1:30, and it was
Have a heart.
Right, have a heart. Where's the love? And it's about survival crimes. There are a lot of crimes that people do that are, I mean, for survival.
That's correct. Yeah, it's misdemeanor survival activity is, at least it was declared 20 years ago in Florida, in the Pottinger decision, to be something that that could not be enforced by local ordinances because there was no shelter for people and no alternatives. And so it was a form of status crime. But so that's what we're going to be bringing up at 1:30 on Thursday. I guess it's 2 weeks from today. Huh?
Yep. And there will be cookies, and we will have a discussion. And I believe that Chief Mills is being invited, although I don't know if he'll show up.
Indeed. Well, since you're there, how can he avoid coming? I mean, you two got on so well.
I'm bringing hard cookies.
There you go. Or maybe handcuff cookies would be a little better.
It depends on how creative the people can be where I find the cookies.
Anything else you want to pass on, Alicia? I'm glad you brought it up because it's in my notes, but for some reason I have not yet mentioned it in this broadcast that February 14th is... Valentine's Day, it's actually, you know, have a heart, stop the survival sweeps, or survival crime, quote-unquote, sweeps. I appreciate your mentioning that. Anything else you want to pass on?
No, just, I guess just that the Ross camp currently needs water. They could use diaper wipes. It's going to start raining again, I guess, for a few days straight. So the same need of warm clothes, blankets. If you want to get together with me, I'm available to help distribute things. If you're, you know, uncomfortable with going there, you can reach out to me on Facebook. My name's Alicia Kuhl, K-U-H-L. I can get the items to the people for you if you want. But I'm just trying to, like I said, get that immediate need met while the city can work on what the next steps are.
Have you had any connection with Curtis Relaford?
No.
You know who he is?
No, I have not heard that name.
Curtis is a guy who has he's an African-American guy who has done some kind of cross-country survival material transporting, blankets and clothing and other things to places where there's disaster areas. You can occasionally find him downtown dancing on top of his vehicle, which is this big truck. I think he has actually one truck followed by another truck. And playing, loud music to the chagrin of some of the authorities. He's been hassled by cops repeatedly for doing this. But he's still doing it. He's still speaking out on these issues. He's one of the criticisms some have levied against him is he hasn't been giving much attention to the local poor. He's more into Navajos, Katrina victims, things like that. But maybe I can hook him up with you, get him to call you and get in touch with you. Who knows?
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. Well, if people want to reach you, Facebook, Alicia Kuhl, K-U-H-L, correct?
Yes, K-U-H-L, and I'm open to getting... usually, I don't just add anybody, you know, unless we have mutual friends, but you can send me a message, and I will accept it.
Sounds good. Thanks, Alicia, and carry on.
Thank you, Robert.
All right. Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
You too. And I may actually try to reach Curtis on the phone, see if we can see what he's up to. So Curtis is occupied, but I'm going to hook him up with Alicia. Here's just a little bit of audio from my last wanderings around the Ross Camp area. And then we're going to, I'm going to say goodbye now and hope you'll join us again on Sunday. Or more important, do some stuff outside that... supports folks who are outside or else at least acknowledges their right to exist and the right to be treated as human beings, which is something this community seems to have forgotten, and not just this community, but communities across the country. But, of course, the rich will never be poor, as Carol Denny says. And it's January 28th, 2019, about 20 to 1. Notice, says the sign, landscape area closed to the public at all times, no trespassing, which they mean a grassy area between this erected fence and the Gateway Shopping Center.
Ernst Rosenthal.
And you say that you just came from the Ross Camp, and
you're a little sad because you knew someone who knew someone who died here?
Yeah, a person passed away. He was one of the early people to go to the camp, and I talked to a number of people who had known him in the past. And he came early, and when he first came there, of course, it was just a couple of people that, because people have nowhere to go, they finally found a place. And so what happens now, they decide, let's fence it off. You know, let's make life as difficult for people as possible.
Well, there are homeless, after all, shiftless, lazy bums who come to churches for meals.
How dare them?
Indeed. And you actually are, you're a man who comes pretty regularly to the Red Church.
Yes, I do. We have Monday Night Coffee House. Everybody is invited. We have coffee at Popcorn 445, a little music, a little Bible study, and a full meal at 6. Everyone is welcome.
Any dancing while the Bible study takes place?
Occasionally, yes. Ariane has danced before. She's quite a good dancer, but that's a rare occurrence.
Have you danced?
No. Thankfully, for the benefit of all alive, I have it.
You may be selling yourself short.
Well, what has to, as Clint Eastwood said, what has to realize one's limitations.
Clint Eastwood. And we've been talking with?
Ernst Rosenthal.
Thanks, Ernst.
Have an excellent day.
You too. See you tonight. Yep, a pathway down to the Ross area, which the fence can be opened and closed by a kind of a tie, and that's nice of you. Any reports from the camp you want to pass on to Free Radio?
I don't broadcast.
Okay, I will do that for you. Fair enough. And I'm approaching the camp past the pedestrian bridge, and I'm seeing Teddy. And, hey, how's it going? How you doing?
Fair, anyway.
Any reports for Free Radio?
Sure, I need one.
All right.
Oh, what?
So, radio? Well, this is on Free Radio.
Not on, like, WKRP in Cincinnati. Thanks, anyway.
I gotcha. Anything you want to say about the camp?
It's in progress.
How's it going?
Fair to partly cloudy.
And for you?
I handle it. I'm okay.
The needs of the camp are mostly...
boots and gloves.
Boots and gloves. And if you want
less of it, and one good pair on the block.
And golf shoes.
But not golf clubs?
Maybe says pewter putter, putter pooter. Maybe, you know, one man's, you know, medicine's another man's cure. Don't have to throw it all in the fucking creek to get over it.
You can order some golf shoes.
And we've been talking with?
Who?
We've been talking with, if you want to say.
But I talked with all of them if they want to talk. A lot of them don't like to speak. They've been broke down, beat down, and think everybody's the enemy.
And your first name is, if you wish to say?
Puddintain.
Thank you, Puddintain.
Yeah, have a nice day.
You too. Porta potties has increased to 6. The wash stations.
We need water up here, and this thing's empty. It's been 3 days.
That's what I hear. So Puddintain is telling me that water is needed up here, and it's and the porta potties have not been emptied. Thank you. And there is an odor coming. Sorry, man.
Hey, you got napkins?
And doesn't look too clean. This one looks a little cleaner. This one looks a little cleaner. Oh, it's a mixed bag. The wash stations. Are the wash stations working, do you know?
Cool.
Yeah, right. I'm talking out here with someone who feels there should be more regulation of, in a certain way, at least more people taking care of things. What do you need out here? What are the primary needs?
Water, sanitation, sanitary.
Rakes, you say?
Rakes.
That would be to spread around the mulch.
Maybe a couple more garbage cans.
Sharps containers. And I think I got a nod on that one. Anything positive to say about stuff? How about folks passing by? People are flinging roses from the cars.
The community's been exceptional. You know, they've been feeding us, especially at Christmas time, all day, every day, all day long.
young commendable college students coming down. Socks, warmth, gloves, food, water, granola bars, hot meals.
Hamburgers.
A Christmas tree.
That's nice.
Hamburgers, hot dogs. This week we had a gentleman's group come from a church in Scotts Valley. And
I think they come every week, right?
They're going to start Thursdays, I believe. Hot dogs, socks, water, condiments for your hot dogs, chips, warm shirts, jackets.
There was a meeting today of a bunch of people trying to get stuff passed at city council to, you know, help the camp. There's a dog fight going on here. And my person I was interviewing entered to try to help clear the two animals apart. And they're waving at each other. And that was quickly resolved. That's cool. Bree is returning. You know, there somebody counted 198 tents out here. Does that sound accurate?
I think that may be a little
exaggerated.
Exaggerated, yeah.
Of course, they counted very small tents and lean-tos. And
you know, we're somehow a community. You know, I'd like to see it a little more cleaner. You know, so maybe I'll regulate a little bit.
All right, we assign you the regulator. We've been talking to. We're going to call you the regulator. We're not even going to say your name, but you are the regulator. Perhaps. Any final thoughts for the many thousands of listeners out there?
Just because we're in between houses doesn't mean we're not humane, and you know we do matter.
You're not in between souls.
That's right.
Or perhaps your souls are being crammed pretty tightly together here.
See this?
Yes, sir.
Respect, honor, and do unto others as you expect it unto you.
In the Golden Rule. A new green camp is setting up next to you.
So you know. If everybody followed the Golden Rules and you know, kept their morals intact, and then we should be all right.
Well, thank you, and keep those dogs in leash.
Thank you.
Thank you. Tents are a little more closely crowded together. I see less garbage cans or trash barrels. Square trash barrels inside the actual camp, and I wouldn't say necessarily number of tents has doubled since I was last year.
Wow, that's like better than any box.
And I'm meandering about, occasionally tripping on tent poles. This woman named Denise is a friend of Alicia's, who met with her yesterday when she did a tour of the camp. It's happening there, and I'm kind of taken off because I'm short of breath, short of time, short of patience, but the campground lives.
Politicians have lying eyes, as sure as suffering multiplies, the rich will never be poor. As certain as in life you learn, the rich have money and time to burn. The rich will counsel you, wait your turn, in heaven you'll get some more. As sure as poverty plagues the land, the rich will give you a helping hand. As soon as mountains return to sand and oceans leave the shore, count on nothing in life so well, that if the rich go straight to hell, lots are something they buy and sell, they'll never enter the door.
Our dear and beloved Uncle Dennis has passed away, surrounded by the love of his family. You may remember him for his truly great show, From the Cream to the Dregs, or for the so much needed echo news about the state of our planet, like Earth First Update. Uncle Dennis was one of the founders of Free Radio Santa Cruz. He dedicated much of his life to its survival, keeping the ship going despite all the difficulties, from the recovery after the 2004 raid and the consequent confiscation of gear, to the frequent site change for transmitter and antenna. We largely owe to Uncle Dennis the nearly uninterrupted broadcast for these couple decades. We all will remember him as a true guide for our collective and a wonderful, generous companion of many adventures. He made many years of Free Radio Santa Cruz possible, and we are so grateful for his dedication and so saddened by his passing. Rest in peace, dear Uncle Dennis, great show host, friend, leader, one amazing pirate of the air.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. Remember to tune in to From the Cream to the Dregs with Uncle Dennis every Thursday night at 8 o'clock. Music from the 60s and the 70s brought to you on Free Radio Santa Cruz and nowhere else.
Get this straight.